Welcome to the Scottish Football Marketing Podcast, a podcast from the Scottish FA to help clubs with their marketing at all levels of the game in Scotland. For this episode, we were delighted to have Fiona Green from Winners FDD join Chris Sampson and I to chat data collection and email marketing. Email can be a valuable tool for speaking directly to your fans and wider audience. For example, for the Scottish national team, it is one of our main channels for ticket sales. You don't have to spend much cash to be active in this area. A little bit of time can go a long way. To give you a flavour of what we do at the Scottish FA, we send out emails to our Scotland Supporters Club members on a weekly basis, non-members monthly, and with more emails being sent in the busy periods. This of course doesn't take into account emails for different other areas of the business such as quality mark clubs. You'll hear throughout the podcast Chris, Fiona and I reference data collection. For those new to this area, data collection comes in different forms, but at its basic level, and for the most part within this podcast, we refer to data collection as collecting email addresses and names. In all honesty, we could have spoke for more on this and had a very long podcast. Maybe we'll look at a follow-up podcast at some point down the line. In the meantime, enjoy the show, and off the back of listening, I recommend signing up to a few club emails to see what you can do.
Hello and welcome to show 12 of the Scottish Football Marketing Podcast with me, Chris Sampson, and my talented co-host, Michael Bockel from the Scottish FA. Welcome.
That actually makes me blush.
We've got a guest on today as well. It's Fiona Green from Winners, a company based down south, I think.
Yeah.
And we're going to talk all about email comms and collecting data. For me, this is quite an underutilised area for clubs in Scotland across the board, Michael.
Yeah, definitely, I'd say, or hoping it will be a missed listen for this one. I think we internally at the Scottish FA have realised that we've been needing to do more in this space. We've been doing a bit, but we're now sort of concentrating a fair bit more on it. I think email can be a very powerful tool to get your message across. It can also drive revenue. It was quite a valuable channel for us. When it came to Scotland last year, 2018. So to be effective in it though, you need good data. Good data, you need to push yourself in this space. We've been ramping up our efforts internally. You've seen a lot more with clubs like Celtic and Man United doing this too. Celtic have got their sign for Celtic. And these clubs are at one end of the scale, Celtic, Man United, but it's equally valuable, as you said, at the other end, and there's probably one area that a lot of clubs haven't been doing as much of in this space. And yeah, it might take a little bit of resource to get it started off the ground, get your data collection. However, there is tools, and we'll hopefully go over them with Fiona, that can make life a bit easier. There's simple things you can do to collect data, and there's online email tools that are low cost or free that can make things work for you. So yeah, hopefully it should be a good one, and we've got a lot of questions that we want to ask Fiona.
Definitely, yeah. We'll kick off.
Thank you very much for inviting me. I'm delighted to be here.
No problem. Well, we'll just get started with questions then. Could you introduce us to yourself and your role and a bit of a background to you?
Yep. So Fiona Green, I run a company called Winners FDD. We're a technology neutral CRM and analytics consultancy to sports rights owners. I moved into the field of data about 7.5 years ago, but in total, I've been in the sports industry now for about 30 years. So my first 20 odd years was spent selling sponsorship, representing rights owners in the sale of sponsorship, media rights, merchandise. And so when I first moved into the field I'm in now, it was almost like a light bulb going on. And I remember thinking, man, if I knew then what I know now, I'd have made a lot more commission, I can tell you. I say that in jest, though, because, of course, 30 years ago, we didn't have access to either the data or the technologies that allow us to do the processes that we now use in the sale of all those elements.
We do a bit of work together, so there's quite a lot of, I see a lot of the positives, and I know working with you guys that you're on board to help, obviously, because I've got there's only so much time in the day, and you guys are on board to help with that. And obviously time and resources often will prevent clubs doing anything with data collection and email. How would you make the case for them to adopt it into their regular routines?
Yeah, so I mean, there's two sort of schools of thought. The first one is, if you are not achieving the results that you want to achieve and you continue doing what you're doing, you're going to get the same result. So if the rest of the world, if lots of other businesses and organisations are heading down this route, it warrants exploration by any organisation. But a more practical answer is find a way to deliver some quick wins. Because if you can start to deliver some quick wins, then it gives you a reason to invest more. So those quick wins could be generate more sales than you're anticipating, freeing up your time because you're automating some processes that you weren't previously. If you're trying to get a sponsor over the line and this, you know, the sponsorship sales team needs some insight to help with that, to justify why are you approaching that sponsor. So for me, it would always be try and find some of the quick wins that get you excited, because once you get them get excited, once you see the benefit, it becomes a lot easier to adapt them, to adapt the processes into your routine. It's like any change that you try and implement, because don't forget, for example, in the case of the SFA, you've been around, your business has been around how many years, Michael?
We're going to be celebrating our 150th in 4 years' time. So
fantastic. So 150 in 4 years' time, but how many of those years have you been told to use data, to start analysing data before you make decisions, to start dialoguing with your fans on a one-to-one basis digitally, not in the stadium? You know, it's a relatively new concept for you, and we've got to get organisations used to adapting that change. Find the quick wins, find the reasons to get people excited and interested, but you've then got to find the time just to put in place the processes to get those quick wins.
I suppose after those quick wins have happened, then would you say that you've got a bit of proof then to take to maybe upper leadership, and then you can take things forward from there, yeah?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, in an ideal scenario, say for you, Michael, in an ideal scenario, your chief exec would sign off on a 3-year strategy with a 3-year budget with a staffing plan that goes with it. But resources just don't allow that, do they? They want to, you know, we need to take things in small steps. The only times or the occasions where you will have a chief exec or a management team make that commitment with, and that investment with that long-term view, is if they've come from a different environment, for example, retail or pure play online or travel, insurance, etc., where they use CRM to a great level. And so they know it works, they know how it works, they'll come to a rights owner and implement it. It is a challenge.
What would you say is the best way to start then collecting fans' email addresses? Take us kind of back to the beginning almost.
Okay, so we're technology neutral, so we don't advocate any particular systems or software. But if an organisation has done absolutely nothing and is starting from scratch, we do tend to recommend some of the platforms that have a free base to start with, to make it easy for organisations to get into this. So there are, if you're talking just about email, there are email broadcast platforms that allow you to set up an account for free based on certain criteria. So we use one called MailChimp, and you can use it for free until you've got 2,000 email addresses, for example. Now, within MailChimp comes a free landing page. It's basically a digital form. You don't need to go to any web developers. You don't need to pay ad agencies. And you can create just this simple landing page that you can then cast about as a link and ask people to put their data in. Once you've started collecting it in that manner using the free account, you can then either switch to a different provider that's paid for or take on paid element of MailChimp. And once you've got even more creative than that or more sophisticated than that, you'll move away from using the MailChimp forms and you'll actually use an HTML programmer to build you dedicated forms. You know, the types of competitions and promotions you see yourself when you're passing over the internet. But platforms like MailChimp, they have an awful lot of free products to help you get started. And once you are started, to keep you focused on collecting data, pop-ups for your website, and all sorts of integrations with Facebook and other providers.
Michael, where have the Scottish FA kind of started with this?
We've done quite a bit in different areas. So one of the things that we've looked to do, and we get a lot of email addresses from, is we'll run competitions and Fiona mentioned it there. One of the things we'll do is, so historically you see, and we still do it to an extent, but only if it's around building audiences, but using on Twitter or social, you see a lot of the retweet and follow to get into the competition, or like and share. And as I said, on Twitter, we occasionally go down that route more for Scottish Cup because we're still in the process of building that audience. We've done a sort of bigger transition towards using the website, our website, which I've said on podcast before, we launched at the tail end of 2017, so it gave us a lot more functionality around these forms where we can create competitions, so we can have different fields that will collect the relevant data that we need, which makes life easier for us. We just ran a competition at the weekend before we recorded this. It was for the Biffy Clyro FIFA Ultimate Team shirts, and that competition entries far exceeded anything we would have got on any solo channel, purely because we were able to run that competition across multiple different channels and push it back to the website. Obviously, you need the opt-ins, and that's where we are. So we had a 50% opt-in rate, which is really good.
An amazing conversion rate. Yeah, well done.
Crazy. And we saw the same at Christmas. We did our big Christmas giveaway, and we'll give away tickets. And now a lot of it is we drive it to the website to fill in your details. It is a data collection sort of mechanism for us. But obviously fans are getting something out of it, and we're getting something out of it as well. We've also introduced opt-ins on our website for a lot of our services or various experiences that we've got. So if somebody's signing up for our Quality Mark program, it's a club, we provide them with an opt-in there to receive marketing. And again, the conversion rate for that for us it is great. There's not just, obviously, a lot of clubs, especially as you go further down, websites are probably not going to be capable of doing complex forms or forms at all, depending on what the website is or the level of skill. But as Fiona said, there is free tools out there that can help with this, MailChimp being one, SurveyMonkey being another one. We think we've mentioned that on the podcast before, but it's a way where if you're running polls or competitions, it's having that opt-in message that you're happy to hear from the club in regards to marketing by email. And then once you've got that opt-in and you've got that data, you can put it into your centralised email system.
And actually, Michael, you just made a really valid point there, that even though you're using forms on your website where the purpose is for something else, for example, applying for a club mark, you've thought to add in that opt-in. So if anyone's got a contact form on their website as well, they should add that. The principle actually is, we just talked about landing pages and tactics, but if we were looking at this strategically, what we'd say is every place where you have a touch point with your stakeholders, your fans, your customers, whatever term you use, think about how you can get data from them. And go beyond that, think about every single partnership or contract or agreement you enter into with newspapers, sponsors, any types of partners, and see if there's a way you can bring data into the conversation. One of the opportunities we try to get traction on, but admittedly it's slow to move, is using your sponsors, using your partners to help you. If a rights owner has a betting partner, a financial services partner, a Wi-Fi, wireless provider, these are a utilities partner, these organizations have deep and rich and vast databases. So getting some sort of joint program going with them is a great option as well.
Definitely, yeah, lots of good advice there from both. Take us through to then when clubs are maybe starting to think about sending email comms to fans. Where should they start with that?
So again, this needs to be done ideally with strategy. Excuse me. That what we try to get our clients to think about is how email is just another channel. It's just another communication channel. So in the same way you stop and you think and you plan your content going on the website, the posts you're going to do in your social channel, if you're creating a program or a printed publication, take the same approach to email. Of course, the big difference with email is that you've got, that direct one-on-one contact opportunity. And most importantly, you've got the ability to automate, to add follow-up processes, and to analyze and see at an individual user level what's actually happened. So the process is exactly the same. Think about timing, objective, content, calls to action and target customers the same way you do when you're planning any sort of content. But most importantly, ideally, have an outcome that you're looking for, have a KPI, have it sit within a bigger strategic objective so that you can turn around and say, yep, that hit the mark, that generated me what I wanted it to. That way you get the bite, you get the opportunity to sell into your management why more should be done, more should be invested, et cetera, et cetera.
Fiona, you mentioned MailChimp earlier. It's something that we use at Scottish FA and still do. I mean, we'll have a bigger database than a lot of clubs in Scotland, but is that the best place to start? It's obviously, from my point of view, I think it's easy to use. There's a lot of drag and drop in there. You can get very well-designed emails by not doing too much. Would that be your starting point for a lot of clubs?
Yeah, absolutely. And that's why we actually recommend MailChimp, because in addition to all those benefits you just mentioned there, you don't have to sign a contract. So you can use it for a couple of months, for example, and then move on, or a couple of years and then move on. There's a pay-as-you-go option. There's an option to pay a standing fee per month. But more importantly than that, the functionality you get in there isn't just about email marketing. It's helping rights owners and users understand the field of wider CRM or wider targeted digital marketing. So the principle of list imports, list tagging, segmentation, grouping, personalization, automation, workflow planning, landing pages, all those principles are available within MailChimp. But as you progress, you, the Scottish FA, and you, any rights owners, as you progress into what we call multi-channel or cross-channel targeted marketing, you'll be calling on the same skills and the same tactics you applied just using email marketing.
Yeah, I touched on it before. Our opt-in rates, obviously, for data are quite high because we're football, and football clubs have a very uniquely, fiercely loyal fan base. You mentioned segmentation there and using your lists to be able to split up your audience as much as you would like. Could you just explain a little bit what that actually means, the segmentation side of things, and what the sort of things you could potentially do in MailChimp?
Yeah, so again, you just said our football fans are fiercely loyal, but you're a governing body, so you're customers aren't just fans. You have customers who are players, they're referees, they're coaches, and they might not actually be a fan, not because they're not a fan of the Scottish national team, but just because their interest is in playing the sport as opposed to following the sport. You also have people who purchased an item off your online store to buy for a friend or a family, a member of the family, they're not fiercely loyal to you. So it's important that we understand as much as we can about the customers we have in the database so we can address them accordingly. For example, your fiercely loyal fans, these guys want to know as much about you as they possibly can, and they might be happy to get 1, 2, 3, 4 emails from you a week. But for example, a relative of somebody who bought something for somebody else may not want that. They might want to just be contacted once a month or when a new item has launched in the shop. Your players, your registered players, may want to know when the season starts, when their fees are due, when they need to change from one club to another, what the transfer deadlines are, what disciplinary they're facing, etc., etc., and might not always appreciate being reminded that you're selling tickets. However, as a business, we need to remind them we're selling tickets because that's what we're here to do, but we need to understand the right way to do it for the target audience. So segmenting your list based on what you know about them is really important to ensure you minimize the unsubscribe rate, but more importantly, highly optimize their engagement level so that they go on and do what you want them to do. And whether it's MailChimp or indeed any other email platform, there is always a way to create that segmentation, whether it's a manual workaround or an automated process, to make sure you get what we consider the absolute principle of CRM and data-driven marketing, which is getting the right message to the right person at the right time. One of the examples I always use in my beginner's workshop is, I say, I'm a 52-year-old woman who's been working for many years, 2 grown-up sons, and I earn a certain level of income. I want to know when I'm coming to your match, where's the VIP hospitality and where's the champagne? But my son's a 21-year-old student. He wants to know, where can I get the cheapest pint of beer and how much are the pies? So, you know, we've got the more we know about this, the more we can send those tailored messages. And the more tailored, the more personalised, the greater the chance of somebody saying yes. And this principle of you can send your fans anything because they're fans, that's not the case. Because whilst they might be a fan of the national team or indeed any of your teams, they don't need to come to your website to get their fix. They could go to a newspaper website, they could go to a betting website, even those that provide news feeds, they can go to a radio station website. So you've got to make sure you're providing them with what they want, so they give you what you want. You want them continuously coming back to your site and continuously engaging in your content, not somebody else's.
GDPR obviously came into play last May. It's impacted a lot of us, of what we've been doing and the work we've been doing together, Fiona, obviously. We know clubs like Man United tried to get ahead of the curve and went on a massive data recruitment thing. I think you've talked on another podcast before about how you had signed up to Man United and then they asked you to opt in even though you kind of already opted in. So obviously a lot of people have looked at it in different ways and interpreted it in different ways. How have clubs been affected by it, do you think, and what do clubs or should clubs take into consideration going forward?
Well, hopefully what GDPR has done is just enabled us all to improve our processes. Hopefully GDPR has not caused us to decimate our email marketing list, because it was never intended to do that. Unfortunately, we do know of quite a few rights owners who were given bad advice, no doubt by highly paid lawyers who were perhaps tightening the belts too much. They just ended up sending these email campaigns, asking people to opt in by email, and when people weren't responding, they said, okay, they didn't respond, you've got to delete them out of your list. The reality is those opt-in email campaigns were never, they were already in breach of GDPR, because under the Direct Marketing Act, you're not allowed to send an email to somebody asking them to opt in. And when you say it like that, you can understand why, can't you? Because if you haven't got the right to email in the first place, how can you send an email asking someone to opt in? So yeah, Man United did a massive campaign. So they did a great campaign to get new people to opt in. But the bit I've been vocal about is the opt-in campaign they sent to existing fans to get them to opt in again, which firstly was in breach and secondly was not necessary. There are so many workarounds, the workaround we implemented with yourself to retain as much as of your data. And in the case of Man United, they have lost me, and I don't know how many other people, because I know for a fact I expressly opted in. I know for a fact that I opened probably one out of every four or five of their campaigns. But when they sent me an email opt-in campaign, I didn't opt in. And of course, I no longer hear from them. So I don't know how many other people that's happened to now. Would I have ever purchased something from Man United? Probably. I'd have at some time bought somebody something from their online store, because there are quite a few fans around. But I'm now no longer going to get their notifications. And being a traditional consumer, we have an attention span that's shorter than a goldfish now. I want to find fast results. So I might, when I decide to buy a friend a Man United item, end up on the JD Sports website or Amazon, as opposed to the Man United website. So, you know, hopefully the GDPR didn't frighten too many people, just made them aware that they need to tighten up some processes. And the processes that GDPR asks you to put into place, so for example, tracking the way you're using data, how you're importing it, what you're doing with it, how you're collecting it, whilst you're expected to do it to conform to GDPR, it's good practice for you as well. Because have you ever been in a position, Michael, before we started working for you, when you needed to go off on holiday and somebody needed to pick up the baton, somebody needed to send an email campaign, and you had to describe to them the segment, you know, what conditions to create, the group of people to send it to? Once you've got those documented, then there's no longer the reliance on Michael being able to tell me this, because it's documented as part of our process.
No, yeah, definitely. I mean, I think there's a few things there, and the processes is the key word, really. Having everything in place for processes, how and who you're sending to, but also around how you're storing that data, how long you're storing it for, and it, I suppose a lot of it comes down to if somebody wants a request for their information, it's that ability to prove where it's come from.
Yeah, absolutely right. So there's a lot of new rights that have been granted to the data subject, the fan, the consumer, the customer, call them what you will. And you've just mentioned a few of them there. So, yeah, an individual has always had the right to unsubscribe, but now they've got the right to be forgotten, the right to access their information, the right to this and the right to that. And, yeah, we have to be absolutely tight with our processes that we put in place to make sure we conform to this. And there's a new one there that I'm really fascinated with, and it's the right to portability. So what this means is, in layman's terms, a layman's example, if I want to open an account with Amazon but I can't be bothered to go through the process and I already have an account with Netflix, I can ask Netflix to make my data available to Amazon, who can just come and collect it to save me having to go through the registration process, yeah? So this right to portability is brand new. I have the right to ask somebody to make sure my data is available for another party to come and collect it. What fascinates me about this, particularly in our world, the world of sport, is player transfers. Does this mean that when a player is being transferred from Rangers to Celtic,
that's Celtic not going to happen.
They have the right to ask for all the data that Rangers have on them. And of course, in a player transfer at the moment, a certain amount of data is going to go anyway, top-level medical data. But what about deep training data, deep biometric data? Does Celtic have the right to demand that from the player, who then has the right to demand that from Rangers? And if Rangers say, no, I'm not giving you it because I don't want Celtic to, you know, by reverse engineering my data, understand more about my training programs. So if Rangers say, no, I'm not going to give you it, what happens then?
It's quite an interesting angle, yeah.
I'm talking about it being the next Bosman ruling. I think that, you know, for the first player that gets that demands this, or the first club that demands this, and the sending club turns them down, I'm interested to see what would happen.
Heard it here first.
But yeah, so lots of implications. Our message to all rights owners or anybody who deals with data is not to be afraid. There are a lot of myths out there. You mentioned yourself the length of time you can hold data for. There's actually nothing in the GDPR that tells you how long you can hold data for. There's no mandate that you can only hold it for a certain amount of time. You've just got to be able to, if questioned, you've just got to be able to justify why you're holding it, whether you're holding it for 1 year, 10 years or 15 years. So there's another myth out there that I spend a lot of time trying to bust. You know, when you sign a form or you create a form or you fill in a form, you'll see this line, opt in to hear from third parties. So rights owners think that means if somebody ticks the opt-in to third parties, I can send a message for the sponsor. Well, you can send a message for the sponsor even when somebody doesn't tick the third parties. The third party opt-in box is for when you're planning on actually giving your database to your sponsor. And of course, nobody's going to do that because you're then devaluing the whole principle behind sponsorship in the first place. The role of the rights owner is to send the sponsor's message on behalf of the sponsor. So you don't need the third party tick box. And because it's a third party tick box, not a lot of people tick it. The natural conversion rate when you put more than one tick box on a form. So you get less data in that sponsorship program.
Plenty of common pitfalls there, I think. Is there any, maybe one or two more that you think clubs should really look out for with email comms as a whole?
Yep. So, and this is one that's common in MailChimp. So, and many other platforms, MailChimp allows you to use multiple lists. What this means is instead of having just one database, you can have several databases in the same account. Now, a lot of people who aren't used to this principle create lots and lots of lists as a way of segmenting. So I'll have a list of ticket buyers, I'll have a list of shop customers, I'll have a list of people who entered a competition. Now, the problem with most platforms is those lists are treated separately. So when you send a campaign from one list, for example, that's been labelled ticket buyers, and somebody unsubscribes from that list, from that campaign, they're only unsubscribing from that list. If they were also a customer for your online store and therefore in the list of shop buyers, shop customers, their data will still be in that list. And when you send a campaign from that list, that person who previously unsubscribed will still receive it. That immediately puts you in breach of the GDPR because you have to give somebody the ability to unsubscribe universally from your organization. So when you're using multiple lists, please, please check first that your campaign platform will do a universal unsubscribe or it does an individual list subscribe. Most platforms do an individual list subscribe. So that's a really important one.
Yeah, I mean, we could spend all day talking about legislation and all the sort of intricacies that go with that. If we go back a step to actual creating the emails and I suppose a bit more the creative side, what in your opinion makes a good email?
So depending on your, at the end of the day, it all depends on who your recipient is, who the customer is. Because, for example, if you're sending an email to one of your fans, they're going to love a great photo of the ball crossing the line, aren't they? Let's face it. If you're sending it to the parent of one of your kids who's registered to come to a soccer camp, they're going to want some training tips, some nutrition tips, things like that. So it all boils down to who's your audience, but there are some principles. Personalization, the more you can personalize the email, whether it's using somebody's name in the subject line to really grab their attention and get them to open it, to actually personalizing the content based on what you know about them. If you know that if you know the segment of fans who are a particular fan of a player, use that player's name in the subject line. Make it the first story, the first image, the first photo they see when they open that email so you grab their attention. But there's some really cool tactics out there. You can use an animated GIF in an email. It doesn't take up too much bandwidth. It's, you know, it's easily digestible by email system. So it's great to open the email and see your story flick past in an animated GIF. Countdown clocks, countdown timers, they sound old-fashioned, but, you know, if it's leading up to tickets going on sale or kickoff of a match, they do work. You know, there's some really nice things you can do, but understanding your audience and using that in the creation of your campaign is the most important one. But some easy things to avoid: don't put too much text in an email. The primary objective of an email is to get the recipient to leave the email and go to another destination. That destination could be your website, your sponsor's websites, your social pages, anything. It could be any destination. So if you put too much information into the email, you negate the need for the user to click on the link and to go to that destination. So keep the amount of information you give in the email to an absolute minimum, just enough to entice them, to tease them, to make them click because they want to hear more, see more, or read more. Try and use an equal balance of text and images. If you use emails that are just image only, some people will build a beautiful creative JPEG. They'll build an infographic and they think, I'll put that in my email. Well, the problem is a lot of spam filters work on the principle that if there's too much image, if there are too many images and not enough text, it's got to be spam. I either won't let it through, I'll push it into the trash, into the junk. So that's another one to look out for. Most of us use mobiles now. 60% are probably opening email on mobile phones. If your platform doesn't automatically optimize for mobile, then make sure you build your campaign in a way that it'll work in mobile. A common error is using images that work fine on a desktop, but when you're sending them to a mobile, they're too small and you can't pick up individual detail. So it's just a few common things to look out for there.
Plenty of examples there to take away. What are some of the best examples of email campaigns that you've seen from any sports organisations?
I admit, hands down, I love the Manchester City ones. I think they're really creative. The challenge with being able to say what's best is, as a recipient, you don't really know. You only know what works for you, what gets your attention. You don't know what's going on behind the scenes. You don't know how many segments have been used. You don't know how much individualization, personalizations they've put into the campaign that you're receiving. But I do like the Manchester City ones. I think they're really creative in the way they use their images, their brandings. I love the Scottish FA ones. I've no idea who builds them, but they really pack a punch. But the thing is, we're simple people. We like to be given an easy instruction: read this, look at this, watch here, click here. So many organisations get too caught up in making them very complex and over-designed. You know, you think about when you look at a leaflet or a poster or the cover of a magazine, you've got a few seconds to figure out, what is this poster or leaflet trying to tell you? What does it want you to do? Where am I going to find the most important information? So take that principle into the into email design. My favourite birthday emails, I love those birthday emails. I love to see how creative people can be. My favourite one is actually one that UEFA sent, and it's probably my favourite one for the wrong reason, but they set up their birthday email with a content management system so that whatever year you were born in, you would receive in your email a piece of content that's relevant to that year in the world of European football. And I was born in 1966, so I got a lovely photo of Bobby Moore holding up the Jules Rimet, which was quite nice to receive. I love it when I receive emails from organisations who are apologising for something they did wrong. Very easy to do something wrong in email. Have you had any of those?
No, oh, we've had to send one out before, yeah.
No, I meant, did you receive any as a fan? Or
I know, I've also received them. And it's funny, because the more you work in it, obviously, if you don't work in it and you receive those emails, you go, oh my God, what they've done. But yeah, I actually just feel sorry for the people that have done it.
Because everybody makes mistakes.
Or it could be a little thing. I think the one that we had to send out with help from you guys is that I'd put together the content plan for what was going in it, and then the last minute pulled a competition from it because we didn't have the prize in time to do it, but didn't notice that I'd left it in the subject line. So when people were opening up the email, they were looking for the competition. And of course, there was no competition because I'd got the guys to pull it. So yeah, we had to go out and go, oops, sorry, look, if you're looking for this, if you want to come in, enter something else, I think we ended up doing. But yeah, it happens. And I suppose the key thing is you recognise your mistake, you fix it, and don't beat yourself too much up about it.
And you amend your process to prevent it ideally from happening again. I mean, I got a birthday campaign from Liverpool Football Club last year, a month before my birthday. So again, it happens. A lot of people do it. And I like those emails. I like to see the creative and fun way they apologise.
Birthday emails, though, just touching on that, I know it's something that we're going to be rolling out very soon. What, and they're quite an easy win once you get them set up to add value. What is your recommendations for a birthday email, Fiona?
So I've heard some really creative ideas. I mean, firstly, you've got to think about your business objective, because yes, you want to engage. Yes, you want to make somebody feel special, and that's, you know, a primary objective. But if you've got an online store, if you've got an appropriate partner or sponsor, it's a great way of giving a what we call a surprise and delight, a little gift, a discount code. So, you know, that's a really good thing to offer. But from a creative execution, I think it was one of your fellow national associations, Michael, that said they'll take their iPhone down to the training ground and they'll ask the players to sing happy birthday, just in a very random, ramshackle way, falling over each other, getting the words wrong, singing out of tune. And that will be the video that people receive on their birthday. I thought that sounded pretty cool. But yeah, discount codes are always going to go down well, aren't they?
Yes.
And a creative idea is actually, and I did get this once from a retailer, I'd love to do it with a sports client, and this could be done pre-Christmas as well as pre-birthday, is you set it, and you know, we're talking about automation here, you set it up for actually a month before the birthday or the Christmas or the Valentine's Day. And the purpose of the advert is actually to say, forward this to your friends. And actually what the campaign is it's a link to your online store. It's not, it's actually a link to a landing page that allows the recipient to select their ideal birthday presents that they'd like their friends to buy for them. So they receive the campaign a month before their birthday. It's your birthday in a month. Why not forward this to your friends? Let them know what gifts you'd like to receive on your birthday. A bit like the wedding, the old concept of a wedding list.
I like it. I mean, it's my birthday next month, so I'll look forward to some Scottish FA emails.
I'm still in my 30s and I still put a Christmas list together, so that sounds a great idea to me. How should clubs go about measuring their email activity? Obviously, I know it'll depend on objectives, but what are some of the common metrics that people will look to see, is it successful, and is there any sort of benchmarks out there?
Yeah, absolutely. So the most common metrics are open rate and engagement, click-through rate, how many people that I sent the email to actually opened it, how many people that I sent the email to actually clicked on any links within it. So those are the two easiest ones to look at, and they give you a real quick soundbite on whether or not you're doing well. So the industry average in the sports industry, and it's very difficult to get benchmark figures, but platforms like MailChimp do provide you with benchmarks. So currently on MailChimp, the sports industry has got an average open rate of 26.5% and a click-through rate of between 3.5 to 4.5%. The caveat to that is they use the sports industry to also include retailers, swimming pools, tennis centres, health centres, etc. So it doesn't necessarily mean anybody who feels that fandom, that high level of engagement with their favourite team or club. But certainly within our clients, you can get engagement levels, open rates as high as 40 to 50% for traditional standard campaigns. And of course, once you're sending transactional campaigns, campaigns that actually relate to something specific, they can go as high as 70 to 80%. And the same with click-through rates. It's not uncommon for 6 to 8% to be an average within rights owners. Rise into as high as 20%, depending on the content and what it relates to. And then outside those, to make sure you know you're keeping your list clean, we have a thing called a bounce rate, how many people are receiving emails that and that the email is no longer valid. Obviously, your unsubscribe rate, how many people are fed up and starting to unsubscribe. So long as you're at below 0.5% or below 1% on both of those, you're doing well. Ideally, you want to be at below 0.5% on both of those. And of course, the ultimate metric you're looking for is your conversion rate. I'm trying to sell tickets, so I promote the ticket sales link in my email. I actually want to see how many people open the campaign, clicked on the ticket sales link, went to the ticket sales website and actually went on to purchase a ticket. That's your ultimate metric.
Yeah, and there's different ways to do that. One of the things that we'll do is we'll use the Google URL builder and we'll put on UTM tracking code. So once you go in Google Analytics, you go into your acquisition campaigns and you can see if you've tagged the app that's coming from email and what email it is. And you've got appropriate e-commerce tracking set up in your Google Analytics, you can actually see the value of how much that email is worth. So, yeah.
Absolutely. UTM links are a great thing to use, but you can also, if, for example, you had a full circle loop going so that your ticketing data was also integrated into your email campaign platform, you can get that full circle loop going as well. But yeah, there's lots of ways to track, and it'd be great to see you using UTM links.
Perfect. What are some of the best examples you've seen of clubs using data then? And we've talked quite a lot about email, and we've mentioned data quite a lot already, but are any clubs or organisations inspiring you in their use of data?
Yep. So, you ideally want to know as much as you can about your individuals in your database. The key areas that we look at are demographic data, then transactional data, in terms of what have they bought from you, how often, what did they spend. behavioural data. Are they doing it online? Are they doing it offline? Are they attending matches? Are they not attending matches? And then there's lifestyle data. Lifestyle data isn't used an awful lot at the moment because you have to purchase it or you have to ask for it. It takes a bit longer. And then the new era is looking at psychographic data. How do we actually understand what a fan is feeling and how do we use that data to go into our data set? I think at the moment, just understanding churn rates is really worthwhile for rights owners. Understanding what we call customer lifetime value, understanding loyalty levels. These are all sort of nice traditional things, but they do take a bit of time for rights owners to understand how to implement it. And more importantly, what to do with it, because doing the analysis is one thing, but actually understanding how to use it is the next level. I'm a huge fan of a UEFA project that you've been a part of, Michael, the SFA has been a part of, and that's the social return on investment project. Doesn't actually deal with known data or structured data, but it's still the principle of data. The UEFA Grow SROI program is about understanding how much impact your fans, your registered players rather, have on society. So how much does everybody playing football within the structure of the Scottish FA save the local government when it comes to health bills or antisocial behaviour orders, things like that. I think that's a fantastic way to use data.
Yep, and if anybody wants to check out that report, they can visit the Scottish FA website. We'll put in a nice wee plug there. It's in the Scottish FA news section. Talking of plugs as well, I'm not going to get you on this podcast and not mention that you have released a book, Winning with Data. It's a book that's looking at CRM and analytics processes and principles within the sports marketing industry. Very good book. What would somebody learn about it if they were to read it?
So we try to cover the whole spectrum of introducing organisations to CRM. So we take you everything that you've heard us talk through before, Michael, from strategy, data, technology, process and culture. There's 10 chapters. There's one that's dedicated to sponsorship, two on data, one on data-driven digital marketing, one on technology. So it covers a wide area. And the principle behind it is if you're a newbie, a newcomer into this area, or if, for example, you're a member of the senior management team and you've got a ton of people doing this stuff for you but don't really know what they're doing, it gives you an overview. It gives you a helicopter view of everything that needs to happen to become a data-driven organisation. And it's backed up with lots of case studies from organisations from UEFA, Arsenal, San Antonio Spurs. But also if you're a specialist, if you specialise in a particular area, if you're a technologist or a data analyst or a campaign manager, it'll help you understand how your role fits into all the other areas within the book. So I like to think that it gives you a broad overview, but if you're a specialist, we'll help you understand how you fit into the whole spectrum as well.
Nice one.
Lots of learning in there.
And that's available on Amazon, I would believe.
It is indeed. It was published by Routledge and released last July. But if any rights owners don't yet have a copy and are interested in having a copy, then just connect with me on LinkedIn and I'll make sure one gets over to them.
Perfect. Great plug there. And I'm sure plenty will take you up on that offer as well. Just finishing us off, Fiona, what advice do you have for smaller clubs? Obviously, we have plenty of top-tier clubs in Scotland, but there's plenty looking to do more in this space as well, and in a lot of spaces across marketing. Many that don't have any many available resources to them either. So what's the kind of top tips for you for them?
So the words of one of my clients who had never ever sent any emails, never done any sort of data-driven marketing, when I asked them the same question, they said their advice is just do it. Just start any way you can. If a club in Scotland is in a position where they've never done any email marketing at all, take a look at one of the free products. If there's a club that has started already and is looking to move to the next level, just think about what is it you're trying to achieve. Don't just think about the technology. Don't just move from one state to another because, I don't know, a software salesman has encouraged you to do so. I guess my number one tip would actually be please reach out to me because I'll gladly spend time talking to anybody by Skype or by phone, helping them try and figure out the next step. But definitely just think about what you need, what you're trying to achieve, ideally what you need to achieve it, and just put it into place and start doing it. I always say that when it comes to email marketing, spend 3 months getting out one campaign every 2 weeks, or one campaign a month, or one campaign a week, and just do it for the first 3 months, then sit back, analyze your data, understand what's going on. You'll learn so much about what your fans are interested in, things you didn't know about them, and that'll be a fantastic starting point. So the principle of just do it isn't a bad one, actually.
That's a great bit of advice, and we'll wrap it up there. Fiona, thanks very much for coming on the podcast. There was a lot in there, but a lot of good stuff, and a lot that hopefully a few clubs can take on, and we can start seeing some more emails across Scottish football.
Yep, great. And as I mentioned, if anybody wants any help or advice, just a chat over the phone. I'll always be available whenever I can.
Nice one. Hopefully one or two will pick you up on that.
Thank you very much for having me.
Thanks, Fiona.
And for the plug for the book. Thank you.
No problem. Nice. Cheers.
Yeah, so we'll just wrap up today's podcast by doing what we usually do and giving a few plugs for things we've seen that we've liked.
Yeah, I'll go first, will I? The first one is for the Terrace podcast. There was, I think everybody would have seen that they're getting their own show on the new BBC channel, which is great. I think more things that we can take different looks at Scottish football and not just your traditional ways, the better. Big champions of the game across all levels, which is great. And just on that, I mean, Soccer FM, we're recording this on the Monday, they had their live event on the Sunday. The Terrace have got a live event coming up. It's great to see a lot of guys that really love Scottish football being able to do more with it. So yeah, great. Looking forward to seeing that. Couple of other things from a marketing point of view. The Scottish Junior FA have tweeted out that they were running a survey on to find out what people wanted from their social content, which I thought brilliant. Again, we've talked about this on the podcast, about getting on the front foot and understanding the audience, and then tailoring your content to do that. So great to see what's happening there. And just a shout out to guys at Clyde Bank and Queen's Park, David and Sean. I think both trying some new graphics recently, Queen's Park with their infographics, and I know David's been doing some stuff with player illustrations, etc. So great to see some what is really sort of top quality graphics going out on social. So yeah, keep up the good work.
Yeah, definitely. Clyde Banks is very nice, and I was really encouraged by Queen's Park's attempts as well. So perfect. Mine are not really Scottish football related, well, not at all, but obviously things to take into consideration in future. We're recording this and it's still the January transfer window. Marseille signed Mario Balotelli, who's obviously quite a big name in terms of world football, and their transfer announcement was quite a cool video, actually, just a minute long, but basically three guys doing a kind of parkour tour of the city, which was quite cool. And then at the end, they kind of spray paint Balotelli on the side of a building, which I thought was quite fitting for Balotelli signing. And then finishing off, Roma obviously do loads of cool stuff, and people like to dislike it sometimes, I think, as well. But Stephen Nzonzi, one of their players, did a Reddit AMA, which is obviously Ask Me Anything. Fans could kind of obviously come forward with their questions, and he would just go through and answer them. So again, quite cool to kind of get that side of a player. And I think it'd be quite a good thing for more clubs to do.
Yeah, definitely. Because I think you normally see Q&As on Twitter, yeah. Ask, insert player, hashtag. So yeah, Reddit, obviously a slightly different audience there, but the ideal format for it. I mean, AMAs happen there on a daily basis with people all around the world at the highest level. So yeah, good to see football getting involved there as well.
Definitely. That wraps us up today, Michael. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
And hopefully got your notepads out to listen to this podcast, because there's plenty of advice and takeaways. So thanks again for listening, and we'll see you again next time.